You and me and Gary griping about the Charlies a couple of years ago is still our longest podcast episode.
There you go.
I think that was the infamous U-boat year. All right, we are on episode 2 of season 15 of Benched and Dispatches, and we are not going to do this whole show in a French accent, as entertaining as it might be, because we've got a couple of folks that would actually do that French accent reasonably well. One of them is our buddy Cyrano. Jim, how you doing?
I am very disappointed, but I am pleased to be here with you.
At least we're not doing the whole thing in French, much less the French accent.
Because I could give that a try too. But no, it's a pleasure to be here.
That would be you and me and Mike sort of mumbling along. Mike is here also. Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I can't wait till later in this podcast when we actually get to the part of the discussion where we link the Charles S. Roberts Awards to speaking French.
Well, I mean, there is an entire Napoleonic category, so maybe we'll do like Eddie Izzard and do that whole section in French. Maybe not. All right. So look, the Charles S. Roberts Awards for 2024 were actually that all the voting was done back in the spring, but it was after we were done recording our spring podcast season. And generally those announcements for the awards don't come out until late summer. This year was actually a little unusual. Aardwolf had let us know that all the tabulations and everything were done in time to do the presentations at Origins. So what was originally just going to be a panel discussion of the CSRs turned into the actual presentation of the CSRs, which was kind of cool for the folks that, you know, were able to make it to Origins and be there as a part of it. I've bugged Gary for a couple of years about possibly just, you know, making Origins the place at which the CSRs are given away again, since they had been once upon a time way back when. Don't know that that's going to happen on the regular, but it was kind of cool that it happened this year, and it would be nice for it to happen again in the future. One quick note on the awards tonight. So there's some things that I will volunteer here and there, but I am a member of the nominating committee. And so there's some things that, like, I can discuss a little bit of process of, like, how the committee does certain things. But I want to be clear that I'm not going to divulge any of the actual discussions that happened between the nominating committee in those meetings, because I don't think that's a cool thing to do. Like, it was never pre-cleared with the folks that, hey, do you care if I talk about it? Like, I'm not going to do that. Those deliberations stay inside the committee. So if folks want to know about process kinds of stuff, I don't mind talking a little bit about that, but in terms of what specifically we actually discussed, that stays in-house. So I hope that doesn't overly disappoint anybody that was wanting juicy gossip behind the scenes about any of this, but I do feel the need to throw that caveat out up front. So with that being said, as a preamble, Mike, what'd you think of this year's awards overall for the 2024 CSRs? Look, the audience listening along can see the list down below in the podcast, post here, so they can see what's there. What was your overall impression this year?
I hate to say it, I did not really put much effort into paying attention to these awards this year as I normally do, and I can't even remember if I voted. I'm pretty sure I did, but it's been so long. I'm not going to name names of titles in this respect here, but there were a couple of titles that surprised me that were nominated. I'll say that. And this comes on the heels. I don't know if the listeners will remember, we did a general awards podcast not too long ago where we had Ian, Rocky Mountain Navy, on.
Yep.
And he was kind of down on the Charles S. Roberts Awards and saying it was, how did he put it? It was a popularity contest, I think, or something in those words. And I tried to defend the Charlies. And after seeing the nominees come out this year, I kind of got his point a little bit more, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a public vote component to it that, yeah, you know, once the nominating committee figures out what is going to be put in front of the public, at that point, the public takes over.
Yeah. And all that said, there were some of the winners I could totally see, and there were some surprises as well, some pleasant surprises. So overall, it's, you know, another Charlie's.
Yeah. Yeah. And the podcast to which Mike is referencing is also linked in the post below. So you can go back if you didn't listen to it before. When you get a chance, go back and listen. We didn't just talk about the Charlies. We talked about War Game Awards as a whole. What do you like? What do you not like? What would you change if you were designing your own awards from scratch? What would you do with it? That kind of stuff. So it was not talking about the Charlies in particular, although we did talk quite a bit about them because they are the biggest awards in our space. So
I don't want to end this sounding negative on the Charlies either. I think it's a good thing, and hopefully we'll continue along with it.
Yeah. Right after he dumps on the Charlies. Way to go. Jim, overall impressions of this year's awards. What did you think?
All right. I have to, my two standard disclaimers, they must be put in place before I have this conversation. Number one, and I say this as someone who's been responsible for coordinating holiday parties, for coordinating outdoor events, for coordinating contests, for coordinating tournaments. The first person to complain has solemnly volunteered to run it next year. And what do I mean by that? I think I'm going to go to Mike's point and say that ultimately, you can decide we don't want awards. And if you say that, I don't think you have an unreasonable position. Or you can say that they don't serve much purpose. But the minute you say we are going to have an awards sequence, an awards show, if you will, or give out awards, you're going to have to commit to some kind of a process. And everybody involved, notably our Gary and everybody else involved, has put an awful lot of thought and care into it. Do not think, no matter what I am going to say about these things, that I have anything other than respect for the people that go through the process. I respect it. Yeah. I can disagree with it. I can think some of the pieces are misguided, and I do. But I deeply respect what the amount of work they put into it and the reason that they do it. And that has to sit on top of everything.
Yeah, well said, and I agree. Yep.
Number two, I fundamentally oppose any award that has a voting component. When I was a member of the committee, I opposed it then. I opposed it before I was on the voting committee. I think it should be a curated award voted by people who know what the hell they're talking about. And the fact is, most people don't. What do I mean by that? That people are stupid? No, people are ignorant. They are ignorant because you can't play all this many damn games. Look at this list. Look at the cost on this list. I'm sorry. You put on this list, and I was happy to see it, because it is a spectacularly lovely game. Yes, this... Oh.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is not the last time Jim will mention the Napoleonic category.
You don't say.
You put Winter's Victory on here from NES, New England Simulations. This is a spectacular game. Who the heck has played it? I mean, come on. It's not fair. It's completely not fair that, you know, you put that up against a game that should not be on the list because it's a solo game. I, Napoleon. Shot fired.
Yeah, I knew we were going to get there sooner or later.
But in all seriousness, I kid. It's, I'm told, I'll never buy it, but I'm told it's fabulous. And Ted, you know.
It must be. It has an expansion coming out.
DC's 15-part playthrough of the whole thing.
Yeah. No. I watched it. I read it. I was, you know, it said Napoleon, so I had to read it. But the point is, you put a GMT solo game that a ton of people played up against Winter's Victory. Come on.
You raise a good point, Jim, and this gets talked about mostly. I hear this in regards to game reviews, and people will say, how, you know, do you have to play a complete game to review it? Or in this case, do you have to play the complete game to vote on it, nominate it? It's a good question.
Well, so I would argue that you may not necessarily, I could see somebody easily making the argument that I don't have to play the complete game to know I don't want to vote for it.
Yeah.
Right? That I could get two or three turns into something and go, God, I hate this crap, and know that I will never vote for that one. So therefore, by default, I would be voting for a different one in that category if I chose to vote in one of those categories. Jim, to your point of the public vote, like who's had time to play all of these things, the way the voting is set up, for those that don't know, you're not required to vote for something in every category. You can skip the ones that you don't feel personally qualified to vote in and simply vote for the ones that you do know something about. And the ballot is set up such that that is an acceptable way to submit the ballot.
I'm in the best Napoleonic game category.
Second time.
I'm in the Napoleonic game category. And I've got I, Napoleon up against another very accessible, very fun,
very light game alliance, Tom DeGlesh, bless him, and I hope he's getting better. He was ill. Up against Winner's Victory? What chance does Winner's Victory have, even though it is the best of the games, and it's not close?
So, I think I know who Jim wanted to win this.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And by the way, I think the only one I've not played of that group is, well, I know of Idapolian, so I should be careful. But that's the only one. Yes. That's the only one. I've played the other ones. I get it. And I'm not saying they're not fun, they're not good, they're not well-designed, they're all those things. But what is the best Napoleonic game of 2024? It isn't close. Now, of course, there is the, should I say Jesuitical, or shall I say Rebus Parenthetical, according to Jim.
Yes.
You know, and that's right. And so that's why you say, well, let's vote. Well, the point is that, you know, if that's all it is, then it is a popularity contest, in which case it is, in my mind, deficient. Now, even by appearing on this list, it has given more attention to each of these five games than they would otherwise have received, by definition.
Yeah.
And if that in any way, and then even in a small way, encourages people to go out, sniff around, look at Board Game Geek, go wherever they were going to go, and poke at them, well, then it's worth something all by itself, isn't it?
Well, so something that did come up in our podcast episode about different awards, the different war game awards out there, and you know, do we care? Should we care? We talked about the Charlies and the reader survey from the War Games Illustrated magazine. We talked about the Golden Geeks and how, you know, how they treat or don't wargaming within that. SD HISCON has their Sun Award. Homo Ludens does their thing. There's History on the Table does some different stuff. I mean, there's folks that have done a variety of awards over the years. We used to do the Reader's Choice Awards back at Grogheads. And it was always, we were very transparent about the fact that this is a popularity contest and that's it. Like, you nominate it, we put it on the ballot, and it is 100% public involvement there. But one of the things that we brought up on that show was a question that I had put on the end of year survey. You know, we do sort of your year in wargaming at the end of every year. We survey the audience out there and see what they think. And one of the questions we asked was, how much, if any, impact do wargaming awards have on your wargame purchase or acquisition choices? And the options that they had to reply to: games that win awards are ones I will go out of my way to avoid. Games that win awards are ones I will go out of my way to purchase. Games that win awards are ones that I will go out of my way to learn more about, even if I choose not to purchase, and no real impact on my decision making. Now, the last of those was the runaway winner with that, right? They folks said generally don't care. But about a third of the audience said games that win awards are ones I will go out of my way to learn more about, even if I choose not to purchase it. So Jim, going back to your point, in some cases, simply showing up on the ballot being nominated may be enough to raise awareness of some pretty cool games to people that would, you know, might not have otherwise known about those games.
I think another issue here, too, are these categories, and I know why, and we all know why, but these categories are so narrow, you know? It's like having a sports award and say, okay, what's the best sport that uses a ball? Yeah. What's the best Napoleonic game? And, you know, you're seeing things like iNapoleon, I think, because that was a new game. I think it had some new mechanics, and it was very unusual. And Alliance, too, for that matter. I think it's these
by
games.
By definition, they're all new games, Mike. It's the
But I mean, new as in terms of mechanics, or just, you know.
No, this is an absolutely huge point, because Napoleon's End, by Mike's point, is not new. It's a classic OSG Kevin Zucker game, which we have seen for, oh God, I'm going to do math wrong, 20 years.
So the system is what you're talking about.
Yeah, whereas iNapoleon, you know, though appealing to the Ed Gein living alone in, you know, in a house somewhere in northern Wisconsin in the wintertime, appeals to the solo gamer, it was a set of new mechanics. It was a new story. And it I think it had a draw there. Plus, it had a very well-known designer. Plus, it had, even in our niche, the marketing push of GMT behind them.
Then it dipped its toes into the RPG world a little bit. So you had
absolutely, that absolutely. Yep, yep, yep.
So, you know, I guess we're going to end up hopscotching around categories here a little bit, where we've opened up with best Napoleonic, because how couldn't we with Jim here? With us?
I regret nothing.
As obvious from Jim's exhortations here, iNapoleon from, you know, designed by Ted Racer and published by GMT, was the winner in that category. The TSRs do not release the vote totals. So all we know is that somebody won. They could have won by a single vote. They could have won a landslide. We don't know. It's just they won. So I, Napoleon, was the winner. The other nominees included 1812, Napoleon's Fateful March by Vuka, Alliance from Columbia, Napoleon's End by Zucker, and OSG, and then Winner's Victory, which was the one from New England Simulations. Those were the five that were nominated, and I, Napoleon, was the one that won. Now, I, Napoleon, it's not the first time you're going to hear its name called during the, you know, the 2024 Charlies. Again, if you took a look at them, you sort of know who won what. But that's the one that won for Best Napoleonic. And Jim, to your point, look, it's the well-known one. It's probably the one that most people played. It would probably not be outrageous to say, even if it's not completely true, it's not unthinkable that I, Napoleon, probably got played more than the other four combined. So,
I think that's true. Just for the record, that does not make it the best Napoleonic game.
I didn't say that.
Okay.
Mike, do you have a preference as to where we go next? You want to start at the top and work your way down? Start at the bottom and work your way up? Like,
doesn't matter to me.
Historical periods, where do you, the period awards, where do you want to go next?
Doesn't matter to me.
Okay, Jim, did you have a preference on which one you want to yell about next?
he wants to go back to Napoleon.
Yes, I would like to discuss for the next hour and a half.
We're going to go back.
No, I mean, if you want to go to the bottom and go to the top, let's do it. Let's start from best ancients and roll on.
All right. So of our best ancients, the winner was The Fate of All from Thin Red Line Games. Amongst the other nominees, the Betis campaign, which was published by RBM Studios, that was one that was in a C3I magazine. Beware of the Ides of March from Hollenspiel, History of the Ancient Seas 1 Hellas from Sound of Drums, and Rome 2 Inc. It was stylized with two eyes in ink, so it was Rome 2 Inc. because it was the sequel to Rome Inc. From Diocletian to Heraclius by from Against the Odds, number 61. So that one was actually pretty close to the cutoff time for the because it came out closer to the end of 2024. Fate of All 1 from Thin Red Line Games. So this was an interesting category in that there's no big publisher in there, right? You've got Hollenspiel, Sound of Drums, Against the Odds Magazine, Thin Red Line Games, and then, you know, RBM Studios publishes C3I Magazine, which is kind of a cousin to GMT, but that's not, you know, C3I Magazine doesn't necessarily have the same kind of distribution that GMT does. So you really didn't have one of the big publishers in there. Thin Red Line Games is a well-known publisher, but they don't publish mass quantities of stuff, and none of it ever makes it to retail. So this was an interesting category. Jim, any thoughts on it?
A couple, actually. Number one, Ancients is always such a pain in the butt to get enough games for. I'm surprised there were this many, but I reflected and I realized, yeah, they were. Secondly, probably more. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong about this. This is anecdotal or impressionistic, but I think that this is the genre that has seen the most, what do I want to say, intrusion? That sounds negative. It's not. Influence in some ways by the modern board game design, especially European game design. Take a look at History of the Ancient Seas 1 Hellas and tell me that looks like a war game, you know.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of things that'll look much more familiar to people who are, you know, engaged in, what do I want to say, viticulture or any number of Euro games. And that's a good thing. I want to say, I don't think that's bad at all. Similarly, we're seeing a lot of games in here that have a very small footprint. Beware the Ides of March is not a big game. The other games that you see on this list are not particularly huge. Now, Rome, that is supposed to be Rome Incorporated, right?
It's Rome 2 Inc. because there was a Rome Inc. that was published earlier in Against the Odds. This is the sequel to that one, which is why it's stylized with two capital I's.
Okay, I must have Rome Inc. then somewhere.
Yeah,
because that's super stupid and tedious. They should never have done that.
Sure, but that's what it is. This is
I didn't say you were wrong. I said I'm just looking at that. I think I've got then Rome Inc. somewhere in a bag, because I think I like games of this type. It is area movement. It's point to point movement. I think it's an interesting concept. But let me not bury my lead. I like The Fate of All a lot. The Fate of All is, you know, it's one of those things that it's strange. You would think that there would be a lot of games on this topic because it's been done in cinema. It's been done in all these other things. But this is, I mean, just for those who don't know, this is Alexander against Persia, okay, which we all know about, right? And it's done, it's a fairly good-looking production. I thought it was modern, and it's nice and big. It's got some nice pieces to it. It's got a nice board layout.
Which one are you talking?
Fate of All.
Okay.
You know, it's very, and I'll say, maybe this is me being old again, not a shock. It's traditional. It's a traditional hex encounter game in many respects. The mechanics, yeah. There's some fun stuff going on under the hood, but it felt like home. Although they did a lot of really fun things with the graphic design that I liked. Some evocative font work and things of that sort. That I thought was pretty good. So among these games, I don't know as I played all of these. I don't think I did. But no, I'm missing at least two of them. But of these, The Fate of All is a very fine choice. And I think the people in this instance, you know, a broken clock is right twice a day.
So this is one of those times in which the Charlies got it right, is what you're saying.
Oh, I'm not talking so much about the Charlies. I'm talking about the popular vote.
Okay, sure.
This will be a recurring theme.
Mike, any thoughts on this one?
I have no thoughts. Ancients are not even on my radar right now. And in fact, the only one I even recognize in this category is Beware the Ides of March, only because I just saw it on Hollinsville's site and read about it when I think it was first posted. So I really have nothing to say about this. The only thing I will say, though, about, I guess, the Charlies in general, and I guess looking at all these categories and everything, was there ever a distinction made between magazine games and non-magazine games at any point in the past? Or has it always been?
Once upon a time, magazine games were their own separate category. And that category went away about 3 years ago when the decision was made to just go ahead and fold the magazine games in with it, because they were always eligible to win within the specific periods themselves. But as a part of the consolidation and reframing of the awards about 3 years ago, and folks can go back and look at when the categories changed. I think it was about 3 years ago. I don't think I'm off by that far. There was a specific decision made to go ahead and get rid of the magazine games as a category, in part because there were other categories that were coming into being, and we were trying not to, I say we, Gary, working with the nominating committee, was trying not to have too much category bloat where you end up like the Grammys, right? Best subtropical Latin jazz fusion album with horns, last names A through G, like trying not to get overly granular on these things. So
yeah, I think it's a delicate balance to find that point where you're not getting too granular, but you're also not getting too strategic, which I think some of these categories are much too strategic.
And the category descriptions are included over at the Charlie's website that you could go look and see where the breakpoints are for the decision making about what goes in which game and which category where. So those you can find over there for those period awards. Mike, do you have anything else on Ancients, or we go ahead and move on to Medieval?
Move along. Nothing to see here.
Let's go.
For Medieval, again, five games nominated: Jest of Robin Hood and Vijayanagara, which again I am horribly mispronouncing, but that's the best you're going to get from me. Both from GMT Games. Those are the first two games, both in the Irregular Conflict series, which is a coin inspired series. Norman Conquest's Men of Iron Volume 5, also from GMT Games. Sword of Orthodoxy was the Ben Madison game from White Dog. And then the winner was Tantomanta, Rise of Ferdinand and Isabella, also by GMT. So GMT had four of the five nominees in Best Medieval Game. And you know, odds are in their favor that they were going to win, and they did with Tantomanta. So I will say that I know a handful of folks that really scratched their head and went, what the hell? Because they had some significant issues with that particular game, that there are some things that some mechanics that they vehemently disagreed with the way they were implemented. But I don't, Jim, to your point, there's probably a popularity effect here, but it's not, I mean, four of the five are GMT ones, and definitely some crossover appeal with at least two of those four. Seems like Tantomanta wasn't necessarily preordained as a winner here or anything.
Well, for those who don't know, I suspect everybody here does, Tantomanta is a prequel to Here I Stand. That's why I have it. That's why it's on my shelf. It is not Here I Stand. I love Here I Stand like a kid, and it fails, ultimately. There's a number of things I would point out that just don't work with the elegance of Ed Beach's genius original.
That is a high bar to clear, though. I mean, in fairness.
It is, but then don't play in that space.
Well,
fair. Go find your own game.
Yeah.
You know, they make very clear that they were intending to do a prequel to Here I Stand. Well, okay. You're the one that put the bar where you did.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. If you don't want to be compared to the Doors, don't start a Doors cover band.
There you go. And then get mad when people say, hey, that didn't sound like the Doors.
Yeah.
That's a great parallel. I thought, frankly, Sword of Orthodoxy, which I bought, looked weird. I think it needed another design pass. To me, it was a cluttered mess. I'll be very direct.
Did you say you bought Sword of Orthodoxy?
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
Because I have someone who wanted to play a game, and I wanted to recommend it to them on that very period.
Well, there's not many games on that period. I was just curious as to why you would buy an Arben Madison game. That shocks me.
Good for you. Yeah. It was a gift. It was something I wanted to show. I wanted to show war games because people know I play war games, and they went, what do you mean? Do you play Monopoly? Do you play Sorry? No, it's not.
It's like Risk, isn't it?
It's like Risk. They're all like Risk. Exactly.
I had that discussion last weekend. Yeah, that's a common discussion for us war gamers.
And what gets swarmed under, in my mind, and to my annoyance, are games like Norman Conquest, which is a mere sad little secondary part of one of the best regarded series of its kind, Men of Iron.
Yeah.
You know, that's a problem. There's my problem. Because Norman, this is actually better even than the Napoleon example, because Tantomanta didn't get any of the boost that I Napoleon got to swarm under the better games in the Napoleonic category, fourth mention. This is instead an example where a game that I don't know how many people outside the space are keenly familiar with, but Men of Iron is a great, great system. I've always enjoyed it. And the Norman Conquests, well, if you're into the medieval period, that's kind of dead sexy. So
yeah,
it got washed, and that's not great. Now, is it on the list? Can people know about it? Can they look into it? Hopefully.
Yeah. I did. I played Just of Robin Hood. I've taught Just of Robin Hood. It is a fun game. I think in that particular case, I suspect the crossover audience may have... I think part of the challenge is that folks looking at Robin Hood, they want the spirit of the Disney cartoon, almost, you know. Sure. It's the fun swashbuckling Errol Flynn version of Robin Hood that they're after. It's more Men of Tights than Kevin Costner, right? I mean, that's really and the game, I think, leans closer to Kevin Costner. It is a little more gritty. It is closer to what we know of the historical record. I think some of the mechanics in it are pretty nifty, but I think I wonder if there weren't some people that expectations were not met, I guess is the polite way to say it. It's a fun game. It's for what it tries to be, it does it well.
You know, I used to perform at a Renaissance fair. There was never any percentage in trying to explain to people the historical nature of Robin.
Oh, God, no. Gunpowder or industrial era. So this is sort of gunpowder up to World War I with the carve-outs for Napoleonic and American Civil War to be considered separately. So this is an historically expansive category because you're including a variety of colonial era wars, plus some actual shooting wars of the early ironclad era. And so when you've got stuff that runs from, the American Revolution, even late Renaissance, all the way up to like the Russo-Japanese War, this is a bit of a mixed bag, I think is the polite way to say it. There are six games in this category, and not all of them by GMT. There's actually two Well, there were five games in this category. Only one of them from GMT. Banish All Their Fears from GMT. Battle of Sekigahara from the Historical Game Company. Cowpens 1781 from Vivictus Magazine. Europe in Turmoil 2, The Interbellum Years from Compass, and Imperial Bayonets from Conflict Sims Limited. So you've got two small press companies in there, both, print on demand kind of organizations, a magazine game, and then one each from Compass and GMT. The winner was Cowpens 1781 from Vivictus. It's a topic. The majority of the votes, I imagine, if the CSRs keep up with such things, I would suspect the majority of the votes are probably coming from the American audience. I can't say that for sure because I don't have visibility into that behind the scenes. So the fact that an American Revolution game won over something like Battle of Sekigahara, not a huge surprise. But it's an American Revolution game by a French publisher with, translated rules included with a French language magazine. And it still managed to come out on top. So something a little unusual there. Mike, this is kind of a little bit of your wheelhouse. What did you think?
Well, the French had an interest in the Revolutionary War. So that there's the connection there.
Yeah, but there are many of them at Cowpens.
Not a lot to say on this one either, other than I'm glad that won on the War of Independence. One, that's one of my favorite areas to game, so I'd love to see that. I haven't really played, let's see, have I played any of these? There's some of these I want to play, but no, I have not played any of these.
Yeah, we had a review of Sekigahara on our site. Mark did a review of that one a while back, not long after it was released. So we have covered some of these. I do find it interesting that, a French magazine game won one of these categories. Jim, any strong opinions here?
Yes.
Oh boy.
This is the one, you've made your comment, and if you want, you have to stick to it. I respect it. Explain to me how you ever put Banish All Their Fears on there.
I didn't put Banish All Their Fears on. Well, I mean, I guess technically I'm semi-responsible. I'm part of the nominating committee.
That game isn't done.
That game is what?
Isn't done. that game had so many errors, and Ben Hull is a god to me. He's up there in a high pantheon because his games on the 30 Years' War, the tactical war battles of the 30 Years' War, are normative. I've got them all. I have one of them autographed. I don't understand. I have not touched Banish All Their Fears. Because the folks who love Marlborough's War, because that's what is the topic here, by the way, and it goes to your point that this category winds up being something of a junk drawer. The people who love Marlborough's Wars, and I'm not really one of them, but I have an interest, I guess I would say, they look at this and they go, why can't we get a good game of Blenheim,
There's like nine. There's not a good one in there somewhere?
There's not one that people are in love with, that people hug like we do some of our Waterloo games. Or that we do some of our Bulge games,
Is that just because we don't have enough of them compared to Waterloo and the Bulge?
It could be. You could well be right that it's just a question of you haven't put enough spaghetti on the wall and then not enough of it stuck. I don't know. But the Bayonet and Musket series, of which this is a part, this had problems with... The rule book was messed up. There were over a dozen counters with errors on them that had to be redone. And they're still working on stuff. Now, the living rules have become much, much thicker. And so I'm not...
Do they? Hmm? The living rule books never seem to remove rules, do they?
No. They're not being done by Dr. Sam Mustafa. They would get smaller then.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised to see this, not because I don't have great respect for, I don't know David Fox, but I certainly do know Ben Hull. And certainly not because I don't respect GMT, but this one was slagged and slagged hard.
Yeah.
And really didn't seem ready for prime time. As to those that won, it is cool to see a magazine game win. It is great. But the other comment I had was, I'm very interested in, I've not poked at the Imperial Bayonet series. That's one that has escaped me because I give them credit for this. And once again, maybe this is the point of the Charlies. You got a game about the Italian Wars of Unification? Go with your bad selves. Let's do it.
CSL actually has a couple.
Yeah, so. bless their hearts. I mean, it's kind of like the way I feel when I'm doing miniatures and I'm playing Bloody Big Battles, which was designed for the Unification Wars, really all the 19th century wars, but particularly Franco-Prussian. It's like, yeah, you got that space to yourself, big dog.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting in that thanks to the internet in part, but we are much more aware of the international publishers and designers than I think we ever were during our formative years of wargaming.
Sure.
And so to find something on, you know, Italian Wars of Unification from an Italian designer, you'd almost expect that. But to find, you know, multiple games on that topic from an American publisher, maybe not as much. CSL is one of those smaller niche publishers, you know, with a print-on-demand market and or a print-on-demand process. That's something that they actually do several of. So. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that may be a case of, hey, I learned about something I didn't know existed before. Moving on to the Civil War stuff.
We don't get to talk about Napoleonics twice? What the hell?
Oh, you're going to get to yell about Napoleonic stuff again later.
Okay, don't good.
About it. Man, there's plenty for you to yell about. All right, so for American Civil War, none of these, I think, are going to come as a surprise to anybody. Thunder on the Mississippi from M&P, Tattered Flags, that was the Luttman design published by Blue Panther, Shiloh the First Day from Revolution, Gettysburg 1863 from Worthington, and then Rebel Fury from Mark Herman over at GMT was the winner. I think that was one of the least surprising winners out there out of any of them. But I don't think that there's any nomination on there that you can go, yeah, I don't really know why that one's on the list. I think they all had, you know, some shtick to them that you went, oh, yeah, I know exactly why that one's on that list. You know, Mike, this is a lot of your area, man. What did you think?
Yeah, again, so... You're right. Any of these could have been the winner, and I think everybody would have been happy. In fact, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. There's, you know, these categories. Best American Civil War game. Well, my God, how many American Civil War games came out in 2024? It's way more than five. So there's probably some that aren't even on here that could have won, and nobody would have argued with it.
Oh, yeah. Now, look, there are years where you are scraping for some nominees in particular categories just to get past, like, three. Civil War and World War II and Napoleonics are not those categories. They are not. So
yeah, of these, I played three of these, and I've looked at the other two and probably played a version of Shiloh's the one that's what's the system? Shattered? No, not Shattered Union.
Blind Swords?
Blind Sword.
Blind Swords.
I have played a game in that series, so yeah, it's pretty much familiar with all these games. And I do think that the winner should have been Rebel Fury, but it was, so that's good. But like you said, these are all, I mean, Thunder on the Mississippi, awesome game, right? And Tattered Flags was, again, you go back to kind of a neat little thing that Herman did there with the miniatures fill in a board game. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, I'll take your word for the, you know, that these were all great games. It was Civil War stuff, right? I kind of shrugged and moved on with my life.
Well,
they're not great games. They're just, I don't care about Civil War. So, Jim, any particular thoughts one way or the other on this?
Yeah, the fix was in for the great one, Mark Herman, no doubt about it. A couple of reasons. Number one, that game set, which is, in my mind, the spiritual successor to his classic Blue and Gray Quads, you know, and you know, they're approachable. They're much more lovely. Oh, they're so good looking. The value, I will say this, is a rare time. I usually don't care about this, but the value in that box is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of game you get out of there, if it were on mere pound for pound value alone, it'd be a walk. But, and here's that but, Luttman's game is a miniatures game. And well, it's a miniatures game played with counters. And the game, the rules are miniatures. He says so. Read the description.
Oh, I know. I know.
Which makes it better in my mind. You know, but no, I mean, Rebel Fury, Mike's right. I mean, Rebel Fury is a great, 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 great game. You should get it.
It was turned into a digital game, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And a pretty good digital game at that.
If you can play it solo.
If
you can.
Well, I don't know why you do that, but if I were picking one up, it would still be Tattered Flags Into the Whirlpool. Which, by the way, for Blue Panther, I thought Blue Panther excelled themselves at the quality they were able to produce. I want to give them a lot of credit for that. But no, this was a great category and a great winner. This is one of those Oscar nominated categories where you go, yeah, I can live with that.
Yeah. So news flash.
Minis Gamer prefers Minis Games.
Yeah. Reported as news.
Yeah. All right. Best World War I. shoots Truppa from Compass, Caporetto 1917, from Europa Simulazioni, Italia 1917-1918, Farewell to Arms from Nuts, Mud and Blood from Three Crowns Games. There was a fifth nominee in this category. However, it turned out that that game hadn't actually released, and that all the footage and everything that everybody was seeing and working off of, all the game reports, the unboxings, all that were all based on pre-press copies, not the actual final ones that were shipped to people. So votes for that one ended up being discarded. Gary had put out a thing, and they're easy enough to find online, where he had released the formal statement from the CSR committee that said, this is what happened. If you want to change your vote, do this, you know, send this information here to change that vote. So that way we didn't have people trying to do a second ballot and have to discard the first ballot or any of that just to change that one vote. That one ended up being pulled out of this list. That's why there's only four of them there, is because it was just an error on the part of the committee. Schutz Truppa, Haya Safari, is the one that ended up winning. Interesting note about that one. The designer had actually passed away before the full design was finished. And that's one of the reasons why it languished for so long on Compass Games' pre-order list, is they needed someone to be available to finish it. Guys, we talked about that one being on the Compass catalog for what, like 3 or 4 years in a row, that it was still on pre-order. But that's what had happened with the designer. And so it took them time to get it finished, just because they had to have somebody else pick up the work that he was unable to finish. But again, you know, you've got three of the four companies in there are all European. So, and the fifth one, the one that ended up not being eligible, was also a European company. So four of the five original nominees were all European companies. Jim, any thoughts on this one way or the other?
I'm afraid I have to defer to our dear friend, Mike OJ. He was waiting for Schutz Truppa most of his life.
Yeah, I know.
I think not just, and I mean, well before there was a P500, or it was this Compass, or whether it was on the Compass magazine or whatever you might have. I will have to defer to his opinion. I will only say this. It's a topic I love. It's a fascinating topic. It's an utterly neglected topic of the First World War. Of the games on this list that I do not own or have had a chance to play, this is probably number one.
Yeah.
Because it is such a great topic, I'm glad it won. I think the pieces are lovely. I've been following it from that perspective. But how it plays, how it reflects the history, which I'm familiar but not no savant, I would defer to OJ.
Yeah, fair enough. Mike, thoughts, comments?
Yeah, I'll just repeat that. World War One is, I own some World War One games, but that's one of the categories that I need to get to. Another one of those eras I need to play.
Moving into World War II, this is where a lot of the big hitters showed up. Old School Tactical Volume 4, Italian Theater. A lot of Italian games this year in the, you know, or Italian topics, things on the Italian peninsula in all different years and eras. 1 Hour World War II from Worthington, Stalingrad Roads from Nuts Publishing, Greatest Day Utah Beach from Multiman. The winner was Panzer North Africa by Jim Day and Fernando Sola Ramos from published by GMT Games. That was the winner for Best World War II game. Look, Panzer North Africa is part of a well-loved series. It is from the 800-pound gorilla in the room, you know, in terms of publishers. But it's not like, I mean, Worthington and Multiman are not nobodies, so it's not like it was GMT against, you know, Snow White's dwarves or anything. These, you know, even the Old School Tactical one, the Italian Theater game, Flying Pig, that's volume four of a series that Flying Pig's been, you know, able to push out a bunch of, and had second editions printed of several already by the time we got around to this one. This, you know, there are no lightweights in this category at all. Jim, anything jump out at you one way or the other on this?
Did you really put 1 Hour World War II in the same category with the Greatest Day Utah Beach? And when you did that, did you not wonder if you had not made a mistake or caused some kind of a problem?
Yeah. They're all games on World War II, and there's a whole committee that handles this stuff.
You do understand that the GTS series, of which that is a part, allows for 2 to 12 players.
Yes.
And has a playing time between, I'm just looking at it on GMT, or Board Game Geek, sorry, 120 to 2,000 minutes.
Yeah, oh, I know. No, there's 1 hour World War II, and then there's Greatest Day Utah Beach, which is 1 hour, half the setup.
I
I will also say, having both played and taught 1 hour World War II multiple times, that it's only 1 hour World War II if you have five people who know what they're doing. If you're teaching anybody how to play, it's 90-minute World War II at a minimum.
And that is not, please, people, please, I am not knocking 1 hour World War II. I am not doing that. Howsomever.
No, you're waiting for the Napoleonic equivalent, the 1 hour Napoleon one to come out so you can know that one.
To me, there's something structurally wrong there. And I don't know how you resolve it. I don't, unless it's going to be something as simple as best light World War II game, best heavy World War, and nobody wants to do that. I get it.
Well, at that point, you get back to category proliferation. But yes. Also, keep in mind, too, that BGG, for their categories, they've got a light, medium, and heavy category also, you know, in terms of their categories. They don't do that for war games as a whole. They do it for their overall games, and then they've got war games as sort of its own separate side niche with a bunch of other things in it.
Right. But, you know, and not to go into that particular cul-de-sac, but the weight system in BGG is a longstanding joke.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. But they've at least got there is garbage data underlying the idea of which things end up in which weighted category. However, it's the only data they've got, and it's what they generally use for dividing things into light, medium, and heavy, because that's the only data you've got to work with. So, but yeah, of those, we've got a Panzer North Africa AAR coming. We've got a review of 1 hour World War II on the site. Stalingrad Roads we had as one of our events at Origins this past year. Greatest Day Utah Beach. The problem is that, you know, as you pointed out with the play times, that's fairly excessive for something like a convention game. You could try, but it would be a real pain. Beyond that, I know a lot of people that love the GTS system and have played the hell out of it and love this game in that series.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God, yes. This game has fans, people. If you doubt that, dude, stop today. They don't.
And interestingly, four of these five games are all series games.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, but that, you know, and I'm not going to criticize it. By the way, I hope you realize once again, I'm not criticizing these games or saying none of these belong. That is, those are not the words emerging from my mouth. What instead I am saying, though, is a lot of these particular games, especially in the broken, you know, fan vote mod, you know, modality that we have here, it's obvious what was going to win here. I guess I am a little surprised there were no ASL modules that were eligible in this window.
There might have been, and they just didn't make it out of the nominating committee. So this might be a good place to pause briefly and describe a little bit of process for how things happen. So as the nominating committee gathers over several different meetings, anybody can propose a game be nominated, and the discussion happens among the committee. So I am nominating this game within this category or these categories, plural, because you'll see when we get to the mode awards, there are several places where they could come up. And I'm doing, you know, it was done by these people, released here. I'm nominating it for these reasons, and the committee as a whole will have a discussion around that. The nominees in each of the categories, they're not capped during that step of the process. So you could have 27 different games nominated for World War II at that point in the process. Once all of the nominees are collected and we are done adding nominees to the overall pool, there is a vote taken amongst the nominating committee for that get you down to the ones that finally appear in front of the public. There, the nominations can go for as long as people want to continue having those nominations within the confines of the meetings that we've got set aside on the schedule to do. And there's not just one. There's three or four of these that will be scheduled so that we can make sure everybody's got a chance to attend multiples if possible. And we do them on the weekends, so the Europeans can be a part of it also. But there is a vote taken within the nominating committee that winnows those things out. So, Jim, to your point, there may have been an ASL module in the nomination process in that original funnel that just didn't emerge from the final vote within the nominating committee.
Well, so that's a good question, though. An ASL module, I mean, ASL has been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
An ASL module would be considered for a new war game award?
I don't recall the specific eligibility criteria. I'd have to go back and look. And that, you know, again, goes back to, even if it was, that's the process it would have had to go through to get to this point. So I would think ASL modules would be like expansions rather than games. That would be where I would
think it depends on the nature of the module.
Probably. To an extent, but
there's a big difference between some of what's come out for ASL and like GI Crescendo of Doom.
Yeah.
Season 15 of Mentioned in Dispatches is graciously supported by all of our Patreon members, but especially our regimental patrons who supported us at the top level. The Armchair Dragoons would like to thank Miles R., James M., Kevin Bertram, Catastrophe Games, Fred and his dog, Joseph Knorr, Patrick Geraghty, Michael Sunborg, Stagger Wing, and Paul LaFontaine. Wargaming is our jam, and they help us spread it. You too can support the Regiment of Strategy Gaming as a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
All right, best modern game. There were four of them in the nomination category there. Purple Haze by Phalanx was the one that won. 85 Afghanistan Graveyard of Empires from Flying Pig. Operation Bolabank from Snafu. And Rifles in the Nom from Tiny Battle Publishing. So Mark Walker Companies had two of the four there. None of the big dogs out there, really, you know, of the MMP GMT Compass triumvirate there, you know, throw Decision in if you wanted to make it four of them, you know, as the big companies. None of those were represented in Best Modern Game. And Purple Haze was the one that won. The least wargamey of the four was the one that ended up winning. So any particular thoughts there, Mike?
No, I mean, I heard a lot about Purple Haze. I haven't played it, but it doesn't surprise me that it won. And then to see Rifles in the Nom on there kind of surprises me a little bit, but there you go.
Yeah, I really wish Bolabank had gotten a little more love, but it was what it was. So, Jim, thoughts?
Purple Haze is the only one I've played.
Okay, what'd you think?
I'm fascinated by Vietnam games, and I admit that I played this one. Played it by myself, right?
Say that again. What did you do?
I played it by myself.
Shock, horror.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Although this game is playable by up to four, it's not going to replace, you know, Victory Games Vietnam or anything, but I thought it was good.
You know, you just sat here and gave us a rash of crap about having 1 hour World War II and a GTS game in the same category, and you're sitting here going, well, it's not going to replace Victory Games Vietnam. Well, of course not. They're doing two completely different things.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was the one not making sensible distinctions.
Moving on, so that was the period awards, the ones that are sliced up amongst the different historical categories. The different categories that came about several years ago included several of the mode awards, which were using a specific mechanical or design mode, in some cases, sort of the echelon at which you are operating within the game, or you know, various other categories that you'll hear as we go through and discuss. So, and we've got to hurry these up a little bit because we're already an hour and change into this and we're barely halfway through this. Best strategic game, Burning Banners was the winner from Compass. The other options, 1 hour World War II, Dune War for Arrakis from Simon Games. Lord rest their soul, they may be out of business by the time this podcast posts, because it seems like they've been circling the drain for like 8 months now. Europe in Turmoil 2, The Interbellum Years from Compass, Red Dust Rebellion from GMT, and The Other Side of the Hill from NAC War Games. Jim, thoughts, comments?
Isn't NAC the company that sent out the inappropriate promo items for that game?
They're the ones that used Joseph Goebbels in a Facebook post about, hey, can't wait to go to Germany ahead of the Essen, ahead of Essen Spiel.
Yeah, in front of Essen Spiel in Germany. Good move. A+. Anyway.
That was them.
Okay. But it's a fascinating topic. As I said at the time, insanely poor taste. I'd have binned the whole experience and had them start over because it's a worthy topic. Now that you see what has come out, oh my God, have you seen that board?
There's a limit to how much I really looked into that one.
I will only say, don't you never come and tell me how complicated war games are when I'm sitting here with Mark Herman's Rebel Fury and you're coming with that.
Fair enough. Yeah. I will say, so Red Dust Rebellion, you know, that it's finally released. It's interesting. You could go back through the archives. We had an interview with the designer way back at the Grogheads era of our friendship. It tells you how long ago it was, right? I mean, we're over 7 years now with the Dragoons, and we had interviewed him way back when, talking about Red Dust Rebellion when it was first being discussed on BGG, and he was going, "Hey, I got this crazy idea. I'm not even sure GMT had even signed it at the point at which we were talking to him about it, but been around for a while. Mike, any thoughts on this one?
Just that I agree with the decision of Burning Banner's winning. It's a fantastic game. It's beautiful. It is a labor of love by Christopher Muller. It's an awesome game.
I will say it's one of the most visually impressive war games I've seen in like the last 6 or 7 years. It is a visual feast.
Yeah, and the components are top-notch in that thing.
Yeah. Operational game, Thunder on the Mississippi from MMP was the winner. Luzon Race for Bataan from Multiman. The Betis campaign from RBM Studios, again, C3I Magazine. Caporetto 1917 from Europa Simulazioni. Italia 1917-1918 from Nuts. And Stalingrad Roads from Nuts. So a bunch of games that we'd already seen in their different periods up above all showed up here, which was not necessarily the case for Best Strategic Game, because they're like... Five of the six for Best Strategic Game were not nominated in any of the periods, in some cases not eligible for them. Whereas Best Operational, all but one of those was somewhere up in the period awards. Thunder on the Mississippi was the winner. Mike, any particular thoughts?
It should have been another awesome game. And there's a lot in that box.
They got the right winner. Is that what you're saying?
You know, that's a great series. I mean, let's have more from them.
Yeah. Jim, any real thoughts on this one?
I'm good.
All right. Man of many words.
Well, is he already out of time? He's got to be fast.
Yeah, I know. Best tactical game. Again, Panzer North Africa was the winner here. Rebel Fury, Cowpens 1781, Tattered Flags, and Old School Tactical Volume 4. So again, five games that were all nominated in their various periods, all showing up again in Best Tactical Game. And Panzer North Africa, which had won for the Best World War II game, also winning here as Best Tactical Game. Which is interesting because two of the other games in here were also winners in their period categories, with Rebel Fury and Cowpens 1781. So, you know, you had three different period winners all facing off in one category, and Panzer North Africa came out on top. So, Jim, any real thoughts there?
Yeah, Tattered Flag should have won, but it's still a good game.
That's the hill you're going to die on, huh?
It's a miniatures game. Move on.
Mike?
Yeah, I'm shocked that you have Mark Herman and you have Herman Luttman in this category, and neither one won. That's shocking to me.
That's a good point.
Like Jim Day's the no-name schlub, right?
Compared to those two? Come on, man.
Compared to Mark, I'll give you, but I think Jim Day's got a little longer track record than Herman. Herman's pretty prolific, but relatively recent compared to Jim
Day. That's true. That's fair.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, he's not a schlub, right? This isn't just brand new.
I never would call him a schlub. That's a canard.
Brant, it's just
it's not like I'm in the category, right? It's not like you're in the category, you know?
Well, I mean, right.
Brant, when it comes to Mark Herman and Herman Luttman, you have to understand that Jim and I, we're like Annie Wilkes, I think, was their name. So
yeah.
We want to see them win.
Hey, look, I am a huge fan of Herman, man. He is a great dude to sit around and talk games with, great dude to have a beer with. I am always going to be a fan of Herman, and I'm bummed that he had booked his golf trip before we set the dates for the fall assembly this year, or he'd be joining us again. But it's you know, I'm not surprised that Panzer North Africa ended up winning in this category. So
yeah.
in the reprint space, best new edition of a previously published game. So none of these were eligible for any other category out there. France 40 second edition, which is part of the Mark Semenich, you know, 4X machine that comes out of GMT, was the winner. Port Arthur from Nuts Publishing, Unhappy King Charles from Phalanx, Aaron Armor Würzburg, our buddy Bruce Maxwell from Compass Games, and then Traces of Hubris, which had previously been published by a Japanese publisher and then re-released by VUCA Simulations. France 40 was the one that won. You know, look, when you're opening up to a popular vote, that's probably what you're going to get, right? Jim, what do you think?
Unhappy King Charles should have won.
You think so, huh?
Yep. Unhappy King Charles is a game that, well, I guess I'm making a bad argument. I mean, when I look at these games, I say to myself, what is the game that I want to see people experience that they missed the first time? Maybe because of its presentation, maybe because of, well, whatever. And the game that leaps out at me is Unhappy King Charles, which is a great system. Very few people want to touch English Civil War. I get it. This is why popular votes are wrong. It never stood a chance.
Okay. Fair enough. Mike, any thoughts here? Mike's trying to get his audio back. Uh-oh. Mike is experiencing some weather-related issues that can't be solved with a retractable dome.
Excellent. We're getting to the solitaires. I get to have my way with it.
So Mike loses connection just in time for us to get to the solitaires. We'll hold the solitaires until Mike is back.
No. He's not here. He's out.
So he's telling us he can't hear anything. Oh, boy. I'm going to have to edit some stuff here. All right, Mike, you here?
I'm back, I think. I don't know what happened.
No, that's sunspots.
Aliens. No. That storm outside. Who knows?
That's fine.
That crack about Mark Herman and Herman.
Yeah. All right. We can I've got an edit point in here that we can work with, so that won't be a problem. We are picking up a best political, social, or economic game. So this was one of the newer categories that was created several years ago in order to recognize those games that had some war game like mechanics in them, but weren't necessarily focused on all the shooty bangy stabby kinds of things. And so this was a relatively recent category. I think if you go back through the history of the Charlies, this only goes back, I don't know, 4, maybe 5 years at the most. This certainly post-pandemic. And what you're looking at for this year's nominees, Red Dust Rebellion from GMT Games, so one of the coin series and the first non-historical coin game, was the winner. Arabian Struggle from Catastrophe Games, Crisis 1914 from Worthington, Europe in Turmoil 2 from Compass, and The Republic's Struggle from Knack War Games were all nominated in here. And so, again, not shooty-bangy-stabby kind of things, but not intended to be. This is very specifically not that. Mike, what did you think? Anything, any comments on this category in particular?
No, I have Red Dust Rebellion. I haven't played it yet. And I played Arabian Struggle at Origins a couple of years ago, I think, and it was a really fun game. But yeah, no comments beyond that.
Jim?
So why exactly isn't Alliance on here?
Because it didn't make it out of the nomination funnel.
So you put it in the Napoleonic era, but you didn't put it here. I get it.
Well, okay. I went back to go look and see. It's not under strategic either. So one of the things to consider, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff in the period awards up above that don't make it into these lower categories. They're not all something like the tactical one where 3 of the 5 games nominated were all winners in their specific periods.
It's just weird to me because Alliance doesn't belong in that other category to me, and it definitely belongs here.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the other things that you see in the mode categories are games that were not eligible for any particular periods, particularly the sci-fi and fantasy ones. Something like a Red Dust Rebellion or Burning Banners has no historical period in which it would be eligible. So the only place you're going to vote for those is in the mode awards. So, all right, we're gonna come back to Best Solitaire because that's going to take us like a half an hour. Best hypothetical game, there's this ends up being like the Cold War goes hot category, although not exclusively. That is kind of what tends to happen.
Otherwise known as sci-fi, but go ahead.
Yeah. You and Gary both love, you know, taking the piss on this. The winner was Next War Iran from GMT Games. There was also Close the Atlantic World War III, published by Blue Panther, Enemy at the Gates from Compass Games, and Invasion Malta from Legion War Games. So it was actually a World War II hypothetical in here, because Malta never got invaded. But that's what you had. And there were only four games in this category. I don't recall if it was a short nomination list or that's just what made it through the nomination funnel. But there were four in the hypothetical game category. And Next War Iran was the winner. Jim, obviously, you're going to make fun of this, and that's cool. But any thoughts on that?
Well, this thing just had, I mean, what else was going to win other than Next War? If there's Next War out there, it wins this category every time. Come on.
Yeah, well, and you know, you've got a GMT and a Compass title in there against a Blue Panther and a Legion title. So,
yeah. It is what not it happening. Is.
Yeah. Mike, any thoughts on this?
No, it's like you with the Civil War. I'm not a big hypothetical guy.
Yeah. For Wargaming Magazine, S&T, War Diary, Against the Odds, Vivictus were all up against C3I. And with the voting coming right on the heels of Roger McGowan's passing, I don't think there was ever any doubt what was going to happen to this category.
That was going to be my question, how that fell in time. Yeah, okay, you've answered the obvious question.
Yeah, so Roger had passed away in the later part of February, because it was right when we all got to Gamma Expo, and that was something that we brought up at Expo, where Jason Matthews and I both ended up on the live shows that they were doing from Expo, talking about Roger's passing, because there were a bunch of people there that had no idea who he was, much less the fact that he's in the flipping Hall of Fame there, and it's like, come on, guys, put your heads out of your butts. Like, this is an important dude in the history of the hobby. He just passed away, like, 3 days ago. How about we at least mention it? And so Jason and I just kind of hijacked the stage that day, and we just took over and just went on for about a half an hour about Roger.
Good.
We felt it needed to be done, and Jason had actually met him and worked with him, like Roger did the art for Twilight Struggle, so it's, you know, Jason knew the dude personally.
Anyway.
So yeah, that was the magazine one. I know there are some people that had expressed concerns with C3I over the years, where, like, they put out one issue a year, and so it's sort of comparing the handcrafted sports car against mass-produced off-the-factory games that are, or not games, magazines that are up against them. But in a case like this, I mean, C3I, there was no way it wasn't going to run away with this one. Again, on the heels of Roger passing. That was as foreordained as any outcome in this vote in any given year. I'm not going to edit in a drum roll. I'll probably edit in some sad trombones. Let's talk about Best Solitaire Cooperative. Mike, should I just lift your previous rant from the last time we talked about the Charlies and just paste it in here about why these are the same thing?
They are not the same thing. Why these are not the same thing. These are two completely different categories, and they need to drop the or cooperative game. It does not need to be in there.
We can make it Best Solitaire and Cooperative.
And if you go look at other awards
where you cooperate with yourself,
where they have some Best Solitaire category, some even include an additional category that has Best Cooperative Game, because why, Jim? They are not the same.
I'm being nice. I'm being over here being nice.
Not the same.
Jim's over there keeping himself on mute is what he's doing.
My views are known. My views are known.
All right. So there were actually six games in this category. Wolfpack, North Atlantic Convoy Struggles from GMT. Viva Mexico from White Dog. Rome Tunk from Against the Odds. Manila, the Savage Streets from Revolution Games. Atlantic Sentinels from Compass Games. And the winner was I, Napoleon from Ted Racer and GMT Games. I do know there's some folks out there that I'm trying to remember how Mo characterize it. I, Napoleon, Queen of the Skies, I think is what he called it.
Oh, yeah. I could see that.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's necessarily fair, because I, Napoleon isn't quite on rails as much as...
Mike's actually played it, and I've read his plays. Mike, what do you say?
Wrong Mike.
Yeah, wrong Mike. I haven't played this.
Oh, that wasn't you? I just assumed it was because of the solo game. That's funny.
That was Banzai Cat. That was other Mike.
That's Eckenfels. Okay.
That was Eckenfels.
That's super funny.
I think there's a little more decision space in I, Napoleon than there was in the B-17 procedural games where you just kind of feel like a dice chucker for the AI. Mm-hmm. I think there's a little more decision space in iNapoleon. I understand why folks would still characterize it that way. But I think there's just a little more player agency in Ted's game is my impression of it. So
okay,
good, bad, or otherwise. Mike, did the right game win here?
Well, like I said, I haven't played, and this is what Jim and I have talked about this in the past. I love to play games solitaire, but not that doesn't necessarily mean I play solitaire only games. I do own two of these games. iNapoleon is a fantastic looking package, and it's got a great designer, and it doesn't surprise me that it won. Yeah, I don't know what else to say.
Okay, well, we're going to move on from this. Those were the mode awards, which are more about, you know, again, design mode or specific mechanical approach. The last thing that we've got in there are the capstone awards, which are singular awards for individual or achievement granted annually. And so these tend to be named after people as well. So there's the Redmond A. Simonson Memorial Award for Outstanding Presentation. This is the Graphics Award. Undaunted 2200 Callisto from Osprey. Winner's Victory from New England Sims. iNapoleon from GMT. A Jest of Robin Hood from GMT. The winner was Burning Banners from Compass. And hard to find fault with that one, I think. Jim, what do you think?
It depends what you want. It's a beautiful game. I would not say it to me. I've said this, and I'll say this again about Burning Banners. It does not replace Divine Right in my heart, which I think is what it's trying to do. But I would, if you were asking me which I find more lovely, it's Winter's Victory. But does that shock you? It shouldn't.
Fair enough. So iNapoleon didn't visually do it for you.
It's fine.
Is it fine. Because everything is only oriented in one direction on the table?
I was actually more engaged by Mr. President because I think it's so absurd. Mr. President is that game that made me look and go, why aren't you an app?
They're working on it.
It will be.
I know it is. And that's the thing. It's like, why did you bother with a board game? Give me the app. Let's move on. You know, if you were asking me just which one do I prefer the look of, lay out Winter's Victory. Look how lovely it is. Bear in mind, it's a battle in the freaking snow.
Yeah, yeah.
And it still makes it engaging and to my mind, quite lovely. But of course I'm biased, dear God.
Yeah, I will say I did think that the graphic design on Jest of Robin Hood did a great job of capturing the period feel of what it's after in terms of that historical era. That said, Burning Banners is still flipping gorgeous.
Yeah. So. And the thing about Burning Banners is the designer did the artwork.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know. There aren't a lot of folks that can do both the design work and the graphics work. It's him and Simonich and maybe like three other people.
And there's one or two that shouldn't.
Well, yeah, there's that. That is also a fair point. All right, the James F. Dunnigan Award for Playability and Design. So this is a designer award. Mark Herman was the winner in a category with Joe Balkoski, Herman Lettman, Ted Racer, and Pascal Toupie.
All these new kids. I don't get it.
Yeah, all these mere children.
You know, it's funny because you think about how prolific Herman is, and he's the guy whose first design was most recent on that list. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody else has decades, plural, under their belt, and Herman's probably just now entering his second decade of designing.
That dude has secret Jedi powers. He is the ancient Jedi of our tribe, and he just cranks out a game like Rebel Fury without a great deal of effort, and yet it's I'm like, you are hateful and amazing by the same token. And it's like a great songwriter. I wish with all my heart I could do it, and I can't.
So yeah, talking Mark Herman, and I was talking Herman Lettman. I probably should have been more specific. I'm saying, like, Herman Lettman, I think, is only just now entering his second decade of being a published designer. If he's at that point yet. And that's it. Also, I think Herman may have published with as many different publishers as the other four guys combined at this point, just because Herman's treating designers like Pokemon, right? He's got to catch them all, or not designer publishers like Pokemon.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be published by everyone. Yeah.
Lutman's going to like have to create publishers just to get published by more people. At this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this category could have also been called Designers to be Cloned First. Yeah,
sure. The Chad Jensen Memorial Breakthrough Designer Award, for those that don't know, this is basically the Rookie of the Year, almost. It's somebody it's their first or second published release. I don't know this for certain, but I think one of the reasons it was like first or second published release was to allow for the fact that somebody could have self-published something before getting picked up by a bigger publisher, I think was the reasoning behind that. But you'd have to go look it up at the CSR site or see what they say. There were four nominees here. Clint Warren Davey for 1 Hour World War II. The whole team behind Vijayanagara, there's four of them there. And I'm going to mess up at least three of the four names, so I'm not going to try. I apologize, guys. Gettysburg Time for Heroes has is Andy Lokes, Yves Roy, and Valentin Crespel. Again, I'm trying not to mess up names, but still doing it. The winner was Carlos Diaz Navarre for Tantomanta. And so, Jim, I'm sure you have thoughts.
No, I mean, you know, this is a very different category. It's to me, I probably, what I know of them, and it's limited. It is limited. I probably would have given it to the crew behind Medieval India. You notice how I cleverly
didn't pronounce the name.
Yeah.
You know, I clever would have given it because I think it's the most interesting topic.
Yeah.
I think it's the most interesting design concept. And it's the biggest, hardest swing, which I think we have to honor. Even if you fail, did you take a big swing? And they did, and that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And
I don't think they failed, by the way. I just, you know.
Well, but also given the way that GMT has now positioned that game, it is the first of a new series that is breaking off from the coin series and become the new Irregular Conflict series. So it is not just a big swing. It has now become the first of a new, you know, a whole new line of games. So that's kind of cool. I will say, like, I did think that Clint's action-reaction mechanic in 1 Hour World War II was fairly nifty. You can go read my review of it in terms of what I thought of the rest of the game. But I did think that was a fairly nifty mechanic and a neat new thing that a new designer was bringing to the table. So I don't think he's out of place on this list. I don't have a problem with who won.
Drums, please!
All right, the Charles S. Roberts Game of the Year. Look, some big hitters here, several winners from up above, several multi-nominees from up above. Thunder on the Mississippi, Tattered Flags into the Whirlpool, Rebel Fury, I, Napoleon, and Panzer North Africa from Jim Day was the one that won it. And, you know, again, you're up against multiple category winners in a couple of these other cases. Tattered Flags, I think, got nominated for like five things and didn't win any of, which I kind of feel for Herman on that. And then Thunder on the Mississippi, again, nominated for several and I think only won one. Because didn't it win for Operational?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it did win Operational. But Tattered Flags was nominated in like three or four different categories and managed to not win any of them. Sorry, Herman. Mike, thoughts on this? Panzer North Africa, a worthy winner?
Just that, you know, again, I would say that and I don't mean this negatively, with the exception of I, Napoleon, any of these games could have been the winner. The only reason I say I, Napoleon kind of would have raised eyebrows, I think, is because it is so different from what we would call a war game that for it to win this category would, I think some people would not have liked that.
Yeah, they're probably... couple of faces would have melted.
Yeah. Not like I said, I own the game. It's Ted Racer, and I think it's a great game. But if that had won,
Jim wouldn't have agreed to do this podcast.
Exactly. Well, he would have, and I would love to hear what he had to say.
Yeah.
Jim, thoughts on Panzer North Africa as the winner?
It's a fine choice. It's a potted choice, I guess I would say. Topic, publisher, etc.
Yeah.
It doesn't offend. It doesn't excite me, but it's not for me. So I always bear that in mind. If I were given these five, I would have picked Rebel Fury, just because I think what Mark was doing there was kind of important, actually, trying to leave a legacy of accessible, well-designed, cunning war games, which can appeal to a broader audience and then show up on Steam and then be available to play multiplayer. It's all very cool.
Yeah.
I'm not terribly surprised either that I, Napoleon, did. I mean, I, Napoleon, went through a wave of people posting about, oh, here's what's happening to me now in I, Napoleon. And that's exciting. That's great. I mean, as much as I don't like solitaire war games, if it's creating all these narratives out there for people, it sounds like they're having a lot of fun. So a lot of credit to it. I'm not surprised that it did as well as it did. But no, there's absolutely positively nothing. There is no offense given by Panzer North Africa winning the war.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. The last thing just to cover quickly, there's the CSR Wargaming Hall of Fame. I ended up on the jury this year, not because I was supposed to be. I was filling in for someone who was filling in for someone who ended up not being able to be there. So I was like the third or fourth dude off the bench that got called in on this. So there was no real reason I was supposed to be a part of this discussion. But you know, they needed the help being able to get this finished, and I was happy to pitch in and offer my thoughts. The Hall of Fame that we ended up putting together as the group, Frederick Bay, so the French designer who's done a whole bunch of stuff over the years, had a variety of CSR nominations over the years. I'd have to go back and look and see if and when he had actually won any of them, but I know his name has shown up on the nomination lists for a long, long time. S. Craig Taylor, there's folks that are still playing S. Craig Taylor games at conventions these days, and he passed away years ago. And then Danny Parker, who's probably one of the three or four best bulge experts in all of wargaming, if not all of, you know, the world of history out there, were the three folks that were picked for the Wargaming Hall of Fame this year. Mike, any particular thoughts or feelings one way or the other on those?
I was hoping Pete Rose would get in. Jim,
any real thoughts here?
None. I mean, yes. I mean, what do you do? How do you, well, S. Craig, you know, just look up his resume. I have a lot of his war games on my shelf, and dude knows his Napoleonics.
And you still play them today?
Yes.
Yeah.
I certainly do.
I think that's one of the I'm trying to walk a fine line here between, you know, like what were the things we talked about, but what are some of sort of the obvious similarities that people have here? And this didn't really occur to me until I was prepping for the show tonight. But one of the things that all three of these guys have in common is that all their games are still hitting the table today, and not just like the most recent one they played. I mean, in the case of S. Craig Taylor, the guy's passed away some years ago. But, you know, it's not just Danny Parker's recent game that hits the table. It's like any of Danny's games are hitting the table because they're all good bulge games. It's Frederick Bay's games, first of all, he's got a lot of them. But you're not just playing the most recent thing. You're pulling out some of the older ones and still throwing them on a table and playing them. And there's no real heartburn with any of those. So
I mean, stop, people. He wrote Wooden Ships and Iron Men. He'd be in the Hall of Fame for that.
Yeah.
He didn't. He absolutely did not have to add Midway, the 125, you know, which you might have heard of. Bulge, the original Bulge, the big box Bulge. He did. I'm pretty sure he did Guadalcanal, and yeah. You know. So it's his resume is solid. I am unconcerned and unenhanced by steroids.
The other thing that happened, and this was something that actually had to go to the Board of Governors, was not a part of the Hall of Fame discussions that we had. Roger McGowan was unanimously inducted into the Hall of Fame as well, and it seems a little awkward that, you know, it happened after he had passed away. But one of the things Roger was always pretty particular about, not wanting to end up in the discussion for the Hall of Fame, just because of how closely he was tied to the actual creation and maintenance and execution of the CSRs over their long and varied history, that he was... He kept that at arm's length intentionally. And Gary can give you more details about that if you really care. But that was something that Roger always said, no, that's not for me. It can't be given my relationship to the awards. So it sort of sucks that he didn't get a chance to enjoy it. I'm choking up a little bit here, trying not to obviously do it on audio. But, you know, when it was obviously so richly deserved, 2 decades ago, but that was Roger's wish, right? That he not be considered. So I think it was a bit of a no-brainer under all the circumstances here. I don't know if either of y'all have any thoughts you wanted to offer.
No. I mean, come on. Yeah. I mean, you're simply right.
Yep. Right decision.
overall thoughts on the CSRs as a whole? You know, we sort of opened up with, hey, what was a big comment? Now that we've gone through the whole list and discussed everything we had there, Mike, any wrap-up overarching thoughts there?
Just, I guess it's more of a question and a thought, and that is, is there still thought being put into these categories and maybe still tweaking and changing some of this stuff? Because like Jim said, that there's just some of these games that appear in some of these categories that just don't make a lot of sense.
Sounds like a great conversation for you to have with Gary on an interview sometime.
Yeah, all the many interviews that I do, yes.
I think you should submit a list of written interview questions to the director of the CSR Awards as a part of our 5-question interview series at the site.
I mean, I know it goes back to what Jim had said. It's a lot of work, and there's nothing negative in the comment or the statement, but it's a lot of work to do this, and to ask to make it more granular is adding a ton of work to it, right? And more time and more labor. It's just more of a curiosity. Is it an ongoing process, or have we pretty much said this will be it going forward?
I don't think there's ever a this will be it. I think there's always room to have some more discussions around what can and should happen with category changes. I think there's not going to be a lot of appetite for changing categories every year. So I think when something changes, you'll get multiple changes all at the same time, and they'll stay put for a while before more discussions happen for changes. But I think if you've got particularly strong feelings one way or the other, shoot a note over to the CSR committees, the Board of Governors or whoever. Look, it's not like you don't know where to find Gary as the head of the committee and everything, the chairman of the board, or the grand poobah, or whatever his official title is. You know where to find the guy. Shoot him a note and see what they say. If you don't send them a note, there's no guarantee they're ever going to listen to the podcast and hear what you're griping about. So, and that applies to everybody else listening also. Like, you can comment all you want down on the podcast episode. We're happy to have your thoughts. But if you're yelling at us about something the committee controls, you're yelling at the wrong people. Like, the only thing I work with is nominations themselves. The actual execution of the awards is handled by a completely different group of people, and they're the ones you got to go yell at about those. Jim, any other thoughts on this?
I think I step back and say I hope we're promoting the hobby. I hope that the Charlies will be a discussion piece. You know, all award show are ultimately like coffee table books and internet lists. They're intended to start conversations. Who are the best 4 baseball players of all time? Who are the 10 best quarterbacks of all time? It's intended to start a conversation. And if these insert into the conversation games that maybe people haven't heard of before, or with which they only had a passing familiarity, then that's good.
Yeah. No, that I think that idea came up during our conversation on Wargaming Awards in terms of sort of who are these for and why do we do this and what does it matter? Ultimately, if it helps people find cool new games to check out, okay, that's not a bad thing. You know, that's not the worst outcome you could have from all of this, is it? Yeah.
So it's why do we write reviews? Why do we do AARs? Why do we do plays? Not just to fill the hours of our lonely days, but it's to share with people games we've enjoyed or maybe that we hated and letting people know what we thought about.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. All right. I think this has run pretty long, but it was expected to given the topic that we were tackling here. So we sort of knew that was going on. I definitely appreciate you guys sticking out one of our longer episodes here. I'm promising the audience that the rest of the season will not run north of 90 minutes. Although, once we edit out Mike having disappeared in the middle of the conversation for a few minutes, then we'll probably save 5 minutes right there on the runtime on this thing. But audience, definitely chime in the comments below. Let us know what you think about what coulda, woulda, shoulda won, what you think about the way some of the categories and structures of things are. We do have the full list of everything linked to this, so you can click over there and go see what everything was that was nominated or won, or whatever different parts of that you'd want to discuss. I know some of this has already been discussed in other places going back to the summer when the awards first happened. This was our first opportunity to talk about it because this was you know, one of the earliest episodes we've had since we've started this season. So coming up the rest of the season, both Mike and Jim are coming back for various conversations throughout the season. obviously, with the fall assembly happening later this season, we're going to have some conversation around that. Last season, we leaned a little heavily into some episodes where we discussed different series of games like OCS or Battles of the American Revolution or whatever. This season, we are leaning a little heavier into some conversations with designers. So we've got a bunch of different designers lined up to come in and visit with us and have some discussions. And we hope you enjoy those conversations. Stay tuned to see who they all are. I will tell you, a couple of them were discussed tonight during this episode. So a few of them are people that won stuff or were nominated for things tonight that we're going to have conversations with later this season. And we'll have some of the other usual weird hilarity. I will tell you, the next episode, we're going to be talking about the Solo War Games survey. Now that we've got the data back from this year's survey, we will have the conversations about who won what and how different people finished and placed. And so Mike and Liz and I will be talking about that. The last thing to throw out there, look, man, go throw us some rankings over on your favorite podcast platform, because the more rankings we get, the more people are talking about us and interacting with us on those podcast platforms, the more we bubble up in the different recommendation engines that people can find the show and sort of spread the love of wargaming there. So please, you know, take a moment and go throw a couple of stars our way over on Spotify or Pocket Cast or whatever platform you listen to us. Jim, what do you listen to podcasts on?
I just use the podcast app on my iPhone.
All right, so yours is built in there. Mike, do you even listen to other podcasts?
There's other podcasts? Tell me this was the only one.
Look, we even have a YouTube feed for the podcast, because I know that there are a lot of workplaces that, you know, will block different podcast apps and such, but they'll still let YouTube through so people can listen to stuff while they're on their work computer. We now have for 2.5 seasons now, we've now got the podcast feed through our YouTube page also. So you can always just watch/listen over there. I mean, you're not really watching. It's just our cover image for the podcast, but that's over there too.
Yeah, I think I do use Spotify. I can't remember. Yeah.
There are worse things to use. No. All right, audience, appreciate you sticking with us. Guys, thank you all very much for being here. This is always a fun conversation, so I'm glad we were able to have it. And an audience, we'll catch you next time on another episode of Mentioned in Dispatches.